The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Ken Bluestone. I am co-chair of the Global Alliance for the Rights of Older People. And you have joined a webinar that is focusing on long-term and palliative care in older age. We are delighted to be able to be hosting this as the Global Alliance, as GARAP. And we're especially delighted that we have two very eminent panelists who are joining us today, and I will introduce them in just a moment. What we are going to do today is prepare, in part, for the ongoing discussions that are happening within the open-ended working group on aging, that in its next panel, in his next session, the ninth session, is going to be focusing on two specific areas, one of which is we are going to deal with today, which is looking at the rights to long-term care and the rights to palliative care in older age. And so what I'm going to do is first explain how we're going to run the webinar. Then I will introduce our panelists, and then we will open it up to a discussion. So first, the webinar is going to happen in three parts. We are going to, I'm going to, as chair, give a very brief background introduction to why we're having this discussion and the importance of it and how situating it within the context of the discussions that are happening within UN, between UN member states, and what our role, what we are trying to achieve as GARAP. The second thing is that we're going to turn to our two panelists, and I have very, very delighted to introduce first Bethany Brown, who is a researcher for Human Rights Watch, where she researches older people's rights with the Health and Human Rights Division at Human Rights Watch. Before joining Human Rights Watch, she worked on policy and advocacy issues for older people with HelpAge International and HelpAge USA, and she's helped guide research, training, and work at the UN. And she's also co-authored a book and articles and chapters on older people's human rights. Presenting with Bethany is Dr. Atiq Rahman from the Bangladesh Association for the Aged and the Institute of Geriatric Medicine. He is one of the senior most gerontologists of Bangladesh. Dr. Rahman is teaching, working, and learning on population aging issues since 1981. And currently he is professor and chair and master of gerontology and geriatric welfare program at the University of Dhaka, as well as being secretary general of the Bangladesh Association for the Aged and the Institute of Geriatric Medicine, as well as being president of the Bangladesh Gerontological Association. So I'd like to welcome you both and delighted that you'll be able to give up your time to be with us. As a webinar, I just want to call your attention to listeners to the order of events that we're going to have. So I'm going to invite Bethany first to give a 10-minute introduction looking at global aspects of the issue area that we're dealing with around long-term and palliative care, drawing on the global research that Human Rights Watch has done. But Bethany will also be reflecting a little bit about the engagement and how to work effectively with the open-ended working group process. Then we will turn to Dr. Rahman Atiq, and who will be giving a very specific perspective from what does this look like in a national context in Bangladesh. Then we will allow 20 minutes of interaction and question, 20, 25 minutes with yourselves, perhaps longer if we can. In order to do this, we will be using the GoToWebinar services. We have the, for those of you who are logged in using the software of the webinar, GoToWebinar, in the control panel underneath the webinar info box, you will see there is a chat function, and if not, there is another version of the software where there might be a question mark icon in the right-hand menu. Throughout the webinar, if you have questions that you would like to put to either of the panelists, feel free to submit those questions using the chat function. They will come back to us as moderator and speakers, and then we will try to respond to them in the interaction in that period of dialogue after the initial presentations. If you cannot, for whatever reason, use that chat function, you can also email us at info@rightsofolderpeople.org. Which is the secretariat email address, and we will also be able to receive your questions in that way. Great. So very briefly, just want to give a little bit of context to why we're having this discussion. As you are all aware, the open-ended working group on aging has been in existence for some 7 years, 8 years. It is approaching its 9th session. And what this represents is a huge investment, actually, of UN member states in trying to look for ways to better protect the rights, the human rights of older people. There is a difference of views in terms of how it can best be achieved, but it is definitely a commitment, a significant commitment. And it is our task, as the Global Alliance of the Rights of Older Persons, the older people, to engage with this process, which is fundamentally a member state-led process, to try to make civil society voice better heard, and to help our members and any other civil society organizations find ways to better engage, to create spaces for interaction between civil society, between the governments, and between national and human rights institutions. And we see this webinar, this is our second, as an opportunity to help provide some more information and some more ideas about how you, as representatives of CSOs, can do this. So that's enough of an introduction. I'm now going to turn to Bethany, who will give us an initial 10 minutes, please, on framing this topic of the long-term and palliative care in the global context. Bethany, over to you.
Thank you, Ken. Good morning, everyone. I'm speaking to you from New York today. And as Ken noted, this open-ended working group on the human rights of older persons is a fantastic opportunity for us to engage to help member states understand what to do to protect older people's human rights. This meeting has happened every year since 2011. And what we've learned is that there's a challenge in this. There are experts on human rights law as it currently stands, but they usually aren't experts on older people's lives. And there are experts on different aspects of older people's experiences, but they aren't usually experts on human rights. And this can make it very hard to see the gap in international law. So let's start with the basic principles. Human rights govern the relationship between governments and people. Governments have a duty to respect, protect, and fulfill human rights for people. And there are certainly rights that are more often overlooked for older people, leaving our rights in older age open to abuse. A human rights framework broadly has existed with treaties on human rights since the 60s. We all have the same rights regardless of our age, at 2, at 20, at 102, by virtue of our shared humanity. These human rights in general are the agreed standard below which human dignity cannot survive. And as the decades have passed, those universal treaties from the 60s, those universal conventions on people's human rights from the 60s, have been interpreted with a lens for women in CEDAW, the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, for children, the Convention on the Rights of the Child, for people with disabilities, the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, and others. Why? Because there were ways that international law should have been working for those groups, since we all have the same rights, but it wasn't. And while we all might agree that we all have the same rights in theory, in reality, what we know is that older people are often patronized, belittled, and excluded, not seen as rights holders themselves, and this leaves them vulnerable to abuse. There have been some attempts in international law to remedy this. The shining example that we have is the Inter-American Convention on Older People's Human Rights. This is a treaty that was created in 2015, and I think some 12 member states of the Organization of American States have signed on to that. That means that any government from Canada down to Chile can sign up for this hemisphere to hold themselves to a standard of protection for older people's human rights. And in the case of long-term care and palliative care, it has some really great things to say. So I'll go into that in a little bit, but I'd like to just talk about one important aspect of the global aspect of human rights for older people first. And that is an argument that we hear a lot. We'll hear governments say some version of, oh, no, you don't understand. In my culture, in my country, we respect our older people. And I'd like to unpack that a little bit with you all on the call today, because culture is no substitute for respecting rights. I don't think that there are so many differences from one country to another, a rich country or a poor country, in terms of older people's human rights. There may be different ways that their rights are being violated, but I think that in some cultures, I would want to touch my feet in greeting as a sign of respect. In some cultures, there is a tradition of filial piety, or honoring grandparents and great-grandparents. And those are certainly good things, but they're a substitute for a human rights framework. And governments cannot delegate their duties to respect people's rights to, say, the family. It can be a positive aspect of culture, but it's not the same thing as having a legal framework from which everyone is guaranteed a fair shake. And that's what we're talking about today. So when we talk about long-term care and palliative care, those things are really interconnected. We can look at the existing human right to the highest attainable standard of health. And that means having health care that is available, accessible, acceptable, and of good quality. Those are sort of the fundamental tenets of what it means to have access to the right to health. And in the Inter-American Convention on older people's human rights, that recognition of that right to health is recognized in the right to long-term care specifically. And it also makes that connection to palliative care. These rights are all interrelated. And as we look at what the right to long-term care means in this existing international framework, the right to palliative care is explicitly in there. In order to have full access to long-term care and quality health care, there must be the right to palliative care as well. When we look at the right to freedom from torture, cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatments, that includes pain treatment. So when we're talking about the right to palliative care, the special rapporteur on the right to be free from torture in 2009 noted that the de facto denial of access to pain relief, if it causes severe pain and suffering, constitutes cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment or punishment. And the special rapporteur on torture in 2013 again reaffirmed this finding, noting that when the failure of states to take positive steps or to refrain from interfering with healthcare services condemns patients to unnecessary suffering from pain, states not only fall foul of the right to health, but may also violate an affirmative obligation under the prohibition of torture and ill treatment. So that's just to show how interlinked these things are. The right to be free from torture, the right to palliative care, the right to health, and the right to long-term care. There are some other rights that we would want to think about implicating as we're thinking about long-term care, such as the right to non-discrimination, particularly on the basis of gender, ethnicity, or age, in the way that people can access long-term care and palliative care. The right to bodily integrity and free and informed consent as well. And that underscores a number of different rights, including the right to privacy, the right to health, the right to be free from torture, cruel and inhuman degrading treatment, and the right to an adequate standard of living, including adequate food and housing and continuous improvement of living conditions. The Inter-American Convention on Protecting the Human Rights of Older Persons recognizes the right of older people to choose their place of residence and progressively have access to a range of in-home, residential, and other community support services, including personal assistance necessary to support living in the community to prevent isolation and segregation from the community. It also says that states should facilitate access for older people to integrated social and healthcare services and to home care services that enable them to reside in their own home should they wish. So that's a quick snapshot about the way that human rights can be interpreted when we're talking about something that is also very concrete. Long-term care and palliative care for people that are experts on those topics, it's a really concrete thing, but it also implicates rights. So as we're talking about ways to engage with the open-ended working group, what the open-ended working group needs are people that are experts in the way that these rights actually play out in real life. And what that means for us as civil society is that when we're experts in a specific area, in a specific country, we can engage with this process by reaching out to subject matter experts in government, not just the aging department in a national government, and helping to get them on board and contribute to what they know to this process. It means that letting your national government know that you're watching and that you expect them to engage in this process because it's something that is important for older people in every country. Those are the easy practical steps that we all need to take in order to ensure that governments engage at this open-ended working group and have the substantive input that they need. And I think Ken's going to talk a little bit later about some other ways that that we can all engage. But from an advocacy standpoint, at the national level, I would encourage everyone that has expertise in a certain area in their country to really make sure that not just the Foreign Affairs Office and the Aging Office knows about this meeting, but the Social Services Departments and the Long-Term Care Departments and the Health Departments, because those are the subject matter experts that can help provide input along with you, with your guidance, to make this next open-ended working group meeting a success, to really help document abuses against older people and where the gaps are, to create a broader paradigm shift towards looking at older people as rights holders.
Great. Thank you so much for that, Bethany. So two things. One, I forgot to mention at the beginning of the webinar that we are actually recording this session. So the recording will be put up on both the IFA as well as the GLGARAP website for people to consult afterwards. So if there's anything that's mentioned that you didn't capture, you'll be able to go back and listen to that. And we will also put other resources, make them available as well. Now, Bethany, I'd just like you to reflect on one very brief question and before we turn to Atiq, which is, and if you could be straight to the point and concise if you can, but is what in your analysis, do you think that the existing sets of rights with respect to long-term care and palliative care are the rights that older people should have within those areas already captured within the existing human rights framework internationally, and it's just a matter therefore of articulating them better, making them more specific to redress the situation of older people? Or do you think actually we are looking at possibly introducing some aspects of human rights that have not been addressed yet before?
And that is a very academic question. And there are certainly two different ways to answer it. I think that the way that we would want to, frame the arguments around the way that we describe older people's human rights is that there are ways that existing human rights should be interpreted for older people. There are gaps in the legal frameworks that exist because of the way that existing law is interpreted. So we can say that there are a lot of places where older people's rights are not being protected, and there is no way that they can be protected under the existing framework. Because of a lot of really mundane things like treaty body reform. Member states have a limited number of pages that they can use to report on their human rights situation. And if older people are not mentioned in international conventions, and most international conventions do not mention older people, there's no way that they're going to find room in their 8-page or 12-page limit to actually include older people. When we talk about what it really means to have the right to long-term care, is that a right outside of this Inter-American Convention that has been specifically articulated? No. Does it exist within the framework? Absolutely. That's why I'm describing all of the rights that sort of come together around it. We have the right to health. We have the right to be free from torture, cruel, and inhuman and degrading treatment. We have the right to an adequate standard of living. We have the right to non-discrimination. And is there any way that someone can actually realize their rights or claim those rights in the international system not without having a specific articulation of those rights in a convention. So we need to be able to reframe and rethink and think bigger about the way that international human rights law should work for older people.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. That's fantastic. I'm going to turn now to Dr. Raman Tvartik, who is going to give us a perspective from his work and both with government as well as a geriatrician and as well as an esteemed member of civil society in Bangladesh. So perhaps you can reflect on some of the issues that Bethany has mentioned and help us to understand what do these issues actually mean at a national level in terms of protecting older people's rights in Bangladesh?
Well, good morning and good evening to you all. I am just hearing from Bethany about the situation, the global situation, and the rights of the older persons. Here I must include some other issues. Older persons is a human rights that doesn't only the human rights, rather it's the issue of social justice, collective responsibility, and respect for diversities. Because, you know, in our country, it might be a good example because it is from a poor and least developed society with huge number of older persons, and it is increasing rapidly. And, you know, basically aging is a biological process and it needs continuous health and medical care and other related support services. But, you know, in our country, older persons are suffering very badly because of lack of our national, cultural, and even individual farsightedness, prudence, appropriate preparation, balanced initiatives, and arrangements. So, for this reason, our older persons, they are a bit marginalized. And you will be surprised to know, at present, Bangladesh has 160 million population. Out of them, 14 million are older. And it is increasing very rapidly. By the year 2025, it will be about 20 million. And by the year 2050, it will again about 45 million. And in the year 2061, it will be perhaps 55 million. So just imagine what is the increase rate of our country, the older persons. And surprisingly, Bangladesh doesn't have any recognized specialist in geriatric medicine, dentistry, nursing therapy, psychiatry, social work, or even allied academic programs. And, you know, at present, we have about 2.5 million very old citizens who are suffering for special medical care. And it is an example, you know, it is not even in Bangladesh. It is very much common in some other countries from developing and least developed societies. And in our country, we do not have any recognized specialist, and I mentioned earlier, and we do not even have a focused hospital, clinic, nursing home, or home healthcare service exclusively for the older persons. And very chronically ill, bedridden, housebound, with disabilities, very old, seriously need long-term care, palliative care from professionals and institutional service providers. Unfortunately, these very two words, palliative care and long-term care, it is almost absent from our academic area. You will be happy to know that the Bangladesh government and the politics of this country, they are very much old age friendly, because, you know, we got a very important old age allowance before Madrid assembly, and it started with some small amount of money, but now it is increasing huge amount of money. The about 3.5 million older persons, they are receiving this allowance. In 2013, we got one national policy on older persons and another law, Maintenance of Parents Act, 2013.
I want to mention about the policy. I was involved in this process, but unfortunately, we have two articles on healthcare of the older persons, but unfortunately, we were not aware and we didn't mention about the long-term care and palliative care. But fortunately, the government is going to prepare another legislation, Elderly Development Foundation Act, and within this act, we just going to include this very much important issue of long-term care and palliative care. And unfortunately, in our general and professional education and even media, the aging issue of an older person, they are not focused positively and not sufficiently. This is unfortunate. So we are challenging, not in our country, in the countries like Bangladesh, for the individual and the family, they are not prepared to address their old age. And, you know, side by side, the older persons, even in our country, they are not poor. They have money, the family, they have money for addressing their health issues, particularly when they get bedridden or seriously ill. But we do not have this kind of arrangement, this kind of facilities, this kind of professional persons. And, you know, our organization, we are working for about 60 years. We are providing services for the older person. That is one kind of just primary health care, not specialized health care, which is very much important for the older persons. And another one, that is, we are encouraging the health care service providers that they can take it seriously, because we know a huge number of older persons that need this kind of services. That is old palliative care and long-term care. And, you know, another one is very much important that Bangladesh, a significant number of persons are challenging with different kind of disabilities, particularly and autism and some other disabilities. And we are not watchful about their old age. You know, at the old age, there will be huge challenge for the nation. So we are approaching for this kind of services for development of special type of services for addressing the older persons with this kind, different kind of disabilities. And another one is the condition of the older women is a bit different in our societies, because, you know, we have 40 million older persons at present, but the old age home, residential accommodation, it is not culturally tuned. In Muslim culture, because, you know, Bangladesh is a blending of Muslim, Indian, and Asian culture, we do not believe that the old home of this kind of institutional service, which is very much important for the very much disabled, with seriously ill and very much socially excluded groups. We are not that much watchful. Currently, we have only accommodation for 2,000 to 3,000 older persons, and without that kind of professional services. And Bangladesh is a country of NGOs. About 200,000 NGOs get registration from different ministries. But unfortunately, only a handful of NGOs are working for the benefit of the older person, because, you know, for different reasons. But nowadays, I must give gratitude to the United Nations. After 1991, when we are observing the first October International Day of the Older Person, after that, particularly the younger generation, they are coming up for taking some initiatives for the benefit of the older person. It is very much encouraging. And what should I say? In our academic area, which is important in a sense that if we do not include in our academic curricula aging issues, geriatric issues, we cannot address the older persons, because they need the services, it is their right. one of our universities, the biggest university in our country, they introduced one master's program on gerontology and genetic welfare. And one or two public medical colleges, they are taking initiative for interviewing palliative care for the first couple of years. But this kind of palliative care and long-term care only for the younger generation, not for the older person. So we are far behind from the international or developed side.
Great. Atik, I'm going to interrupt it just for a moment because we've now starting to get some questions coming through. What I'd like to use is to allow for about 15 minutes, if we can, for some dialogue, as it were. So one thing that's come through from a question that relates to both issues that you've touched on, but Bethany has touched on as well, is the interface between cultural practices, cultural attitudes, the values, the respect that exists within societies, and whether or not that's a substitute for human rights. This is a question we often get asked, and it would be good to just get your perspective on, you know, is that enough? Where does that, how does that sit alongside the call for a legal standard, a more specific legal standard? How do those two things interact? So, Atik, I'll turn to you first, but if you can keep your response briefly, so we can then allow Bethany to also respond.
Okay. Actually, in our Indian subcontinent, we have the cultural practice that we respect the older persons. But from our experience, we are telling that this respect is not real respect, this is pseudo-respect. Because we do not have that much law and some other sections through which we can ensure the rights of the older persons. So only through the respect, showing the respect, that doesn't mean that the older person get the benefit from this respect. So what we are talking that we must address the older person format through different laws and acts. Otherwise, we cannot provide services to the older persons. Culture is very much important, you know. Culture, particularly in our Muslim culture, is different. We think the older persons will remain the members of the older person, older member of the family, they will remain in the family and family members will take care of them. And particularly the female members of the family, they will take care of them. But fortunately, the increase of women education and women employment, the women of the member of female member of the family, they cannot provide services to the older persons. So nowadays, we need some formal services for the older person, some specialized hospital, nursing home, palliative care home, long-term home health care service, which is not still in our society. So if we want to establish the right of the older person, we should introduce this kind of facilities for the older persons formally.
Great. And I think that's an extremely important point that we have to be mindful of the fact that it isn't just a matter of setting the standards, it's a matter of having the means to implement them, so having the systems in place. And I think what we are looking to a set of international standards, the convention, is to provide another impetus, another opportunity for helping to put in place those much needed systems and infrastructure. Bethany, did you want to add anything to that?
Yes, I would. I think it's really good that that Dr. Raman noted benefits, and particularly the gendered aspect of growing older. You know, older women live with the cumulative effects of many different kinds of discrimination that they've experienced over their whole lives, from access to education and access to identity cards to having access to good jobs that can give them economic security in old age. I would note that it's not just about money. It's not just about benefits that can provide for older people in old age. And I say that particularly because I don't think that we can let rich countries off the hook when it comes to protecting older people's human rights. There are problems with forced retirement and employment discrimination. I would venture to say in every country around the world, even in rich countries, there are not services for people who, say, have experienced domestic violence or who are victims of gender-based violence, survivors of gender-based violence. When we talk about older people's rights, their right to health and their right to long-term care and their right to social security, these are all very important things. But older people also have the right to have an identity card. Older people also have the right to not be discriminated against when they want to get a job. And they have the right to have services that serve their needs if they experience domestic violence, for example. So I would just sort of highlight that there is a really broad range of rights. There is the full range of rights that older people need to have realized, and they are not being realized in any country around the world as they should be.
Excellent. Okay, thank you very much for that. We've several questions that have come through. So what I'm going to try to do is to allow some time to touch on these. One is about the significance, the importance of autonomy in terms of protecting our human rights and our dignity. Bethany, you first. Do you think that in terms of the international human rights framework, that older persons' autonomy, their ability to have their own choice and control over the services and support they get, is that sufficiently catered for?
Autonomy is my favorite topic. I'm so glad that someone brought this up because it's crucial to the realization of every right. You know, for me, even in places where older people have relative wealth, the key to realizing your rights is being able to make choices about your life. There are formal ways that this can be taken away, like with the denial of legal capacity by a doctor or by a judge. And there are lots of informal ways that this is taken away. If I had a penny for every time I heard someone say, "I decided to put my father in a nursing home. I decided it was time to take away the keys to his car. I decided that he couldn't go out on his own anymore," I would be an unfortunately rich woman. The way that this happens, happens in the small spaces. The way that we think about older people is not necessarily coming from a perspective of respecting their right to make decisions about their own lives. Older people are capable of being independent and making their own choices, and we need to support that, just like anybody else has a right to those things.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to turn to another question for you, Dr. Rahman, which is something very specific to the situation in Bangladesh. It's a multicultural society, but the question that's come through is, with respect to palliative care and treatment, are there any issues regarding Muslim culture and laws and practices that might affect in terms of how that gets framed and gets taken forward?
Well, you know, what is really in our culture that in our society we are not interested to arrange the facilities for the older persons. As I mentioned earlier, that we do not have sufficient or even minimum institution facilities for the older person, because as Bethany mentioned, that I am an older person, I must have the right to select whether I can stay with my home or I can stay in an old home. And you know, in our culture we do not establish yet any facilities, for we are struggling. And nowadays the huge number of older persons, they are expecting this kind of residential facilities in our society, so that they can voluntarily stay on those homes because they feel that is their right. And another issue that, you know, in our society, culture, the Muslim culture cannot provide sufficient protection for the older persons, because we do not have sufficient caregiver in our country, minimum trained caregiver. Our older person do not have the access to avail the public utility services, and in our society we are not at all watchful about the older person with disabilities, and particularly the older women. You know, my father, he is suffering less than my mother. My mother is suffering much more because she is a woman. It is important for our country that we should not go the ongoing culture. We should remodule it. And our government is very much watchful, and government is going, is thinking to develop different kinds of facilities, though it is on the basis of the culture, not violating their cultural values.
Thank you very much. We had another question. I think we have time just to go back and forth one more time in response to this. It's reflecting on the fact that alongside the discussion that we're having around human rights, these discussions are happening in different ways in through different international fora. And so even though we're focusing now very specifically on, through the open-ended working group on aging, how do we engage governments to think and to act more and better on protecting the rights of older persons, there are also commitments that have been made through other international agreements, through international agreements such as the Sustainable Development Goals. And what is particularly encouraging within the Sustainable Development Goals is that fact that there is a very specific reference to the right to health for people of all ages. And the question was to you, Dr. Rahman, whether or not you think that the actions of the Bangladesh government at the moment are sufficient in terms of taking this forward, this commitment to improving health for people of all ages. I think you've been very clear that there is a long way to go. But perhaps maybe in terms of answering that, because you already have touched on the fact that there is, it isn't sufficient. There is much more that needs to be put in place. But perhaps you can reflect, I think, on how agreements like the Sustainable Development Goals, but more particularly thinking ahead to when there is a convention, how can something like this be useful for you at a national level in achieving the things that you think need to be done to help older people in Bangladesh?
Well, you know, Bangladesh has successfully come up with the MDG, and Bangladesh is moving towards SDG. And in concern of older persons, I mentioned earlier that our government, particularly the present Prime Minister, personally, she is very much proactive about old age issues. And through her intervention, we can get some policy, some legislation, and some other provisions for the betterment of the older persons. And I must acknowledge the UN intervention, and particularly the HealthAge intervention, and through which our government is taking different initiatives. But it is not enough, particularly the individual, family, and the general public, general mass, they are not
sufficiently informed, they are not sensitized, they are not sufficiently prepared and active to face their old age for their successful and healthy aging. That is the challenge in our society. And for that reason, we are working with the government for sensitizing particularly the general education system and the academic curricula and the media so that they can come up with the government initiatives for the benefit of the older person, for the right of the older person, for establishing the social justice of the older person.
Thank you very, very much. So one comment that's come through, which I'm going to mention because I think it's important to acknowledge this, and it brings up a very important point that's come through from one of our webinar participants. But then I'm going to change and shift to describing a little bit of the what next and where do we go next with this. The comment was that we haven't really used the word dementia yet in terms of recognizing this is one of the chronic diseases, one of the chronic illnesses that brings about the need for long-term care, and couldn't agree more. Certainly this is one of the defining features of our society going forward, and definitely is one of the drivers, and really touches as well on this question of autonomy, that even, you know, where people are at some stage of their life may be losing capacity, that does not mean that they lose control over decisions that affect them, because they can still take decisions that allow them to manage this illness in a way which is appropriate for them. And that needs to be captured and recognized and understood. In terms of, so first I just want to thank both Bethany and Atiq for your excellent inputs, for your expertise, and the wonderful detail that you've given us. I took away a couple of particular points that I just wanted to share with you that don't try to capture and summarize anything, but Bethany, you said very early on, and I think this is important to remember, that governments cannot derogate the responsibilities for protecting the rights of older persons, that a legal framework is necessary so that even where we do have and we want cultural values and respect and norms, that we want every person in society to be valued, that underpinning this, we need to have that legal framework that helps maintain that relationship between governments and its people. And then, Dr. Rahman, you also said that linked to that, and I think is that this is, yes, about legal frameworks, but it's also about issues of social justice. It's about collective responsibility and diversity. And with that, I just want to touch on kind of a reminder for people about why we're having this conversation of a convention, and then move on to what we can do to help prepare for the next stage of the discussions. And it's a reminder that this is a discussion about a legal framework, an international legal framework, but it's also a process, and that we need a convention because it's instrumental in driving awareness about the rights of older persons. It is the conversation that we're having now. It's the conversations that you can be having at a national level that remind people, let even older persons themselves know and understand that actually they do have an equal place in society and do have rights. And that's what we have seen has happened through other human rights conventions, is that in when it's used and the process around creating a convention helps to achieve that. And that's a responsibility that we bear. The second is that the legal framework itself is hugely important. We have to clarify what these human rights actually look like. What do they mean for older persons? And getting the content right is essential. And Bethany, again, you said, you know, this, the involvement of older persons themselves is fundamental to this, but as is the involvement of yourselves as experts and people who bear witness to the situation that older people are facing. But critically, it's not what you having the piece of paper, and it's not having the conversations, it's what we do with it. And that's why holding governments, the accountability mechanisms, are so crucially important for a convention. And that's why a legally binding convention is so necessary, because it's the accountability that comes along with that, that how governments have to report on what they're doing. But also, when used effectively, it's the driver for achieving better policy. It's how we implement these standards and these rights that make a difference. And that's certainly what we've seen in such a short space of time with the Convention on the Rights of People with Disabilities, and that's something that we need to look towards. So how do we respond now in terms of what the UN member states are doing? The open-ended working group process allows for civil society organizations, and now for human rights institutions as well, to be accredited. This means that to be recognized as an official organization that can engage with the open-ended working group process. For those organizations that are accredited already, you will be invited very shortly to submit input into a consultation about both palliative care and long-term care, but also on the other set of issues around autonomy and independence, which we'll cover in a separate webinar. And it's critical that you input into that and engage with your governments around that. So for anyone who already is accredited with the Open-Ended Working Group, please watch out for that. We're expecting the announcement of those questions to come out within the next few weeks. If you're not accredited, then there's two things that you can do. The next time there is an open-ended working group, there will be an invitation to accredit, an opportunity will present. Go to the Global Alliance for the Rights of Older Persons website to find out how to do that. When that window opens up, even if you're not able to travel to New York to take part, being accredited means that you can make an input and you could submit something in writing. And it's making visible that you as individual civil society organizations have an interest, have something to say, and think this is an agenda that the government should be responding to. In the meantime, you can, through your contacts, both with government, hopefully, but also reaching out to your national human rights institutions, create a space of dialogue, hopefully, in which the get input into the thinking of what government takes. Make sure that government is aware of the open-ended working group. Make sure that they are actually responding. Hold them to account for engaging within the process. And then ask to have that space in which the different stakeholder groups can come together and to think through what do these issues actually look like from your own national perspective. So what we're trying to achieve is a situation in which we are able to make governments aware that this is an agenda that needs their urgent attention, that we as civil society organizations and representatives of older persons organizations, hopefully, and with that we demand and require that they do respond to this. It is absolutely necessary that we drive this message home at a national level, because that's where the decisions are made. We hope that this webinar and the website of the Global Alliance is useful for informing the work that you can do in these areas. And crucially, as we're trying to build a movement around this, what we want is for more and more members to join us as GARUP. So there is no membership fee. It is simply a matter of agreeing to go with us on this journey and agreeing to our principles and objectives. And the more members we have, the more we're able to demonstrate that we have a common front and that this is an agenda that governments must address. So I'm going to finish the webinar here, and I would like to thank the IFA in particular for its hosting of the webinar. And please watch the space. We are going to hold another webinar on autonomy and independence sometime in the next few months. So thank you all again, once again, Bethany, Dr. Atik, and yourselves for being a part of this. Thank you and goodbye.
Thank you. Thank you.